Jesse, can you hear me?
Good.
Okay, good.
Put that in the center.
Okay. Drop them up on the center, please.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the October 26, 2016 special meeting of the Board of Directors of the Kensington Police Protection and Community Services District. My name is Len Welsh, I'm the Board President, and I'll take roll call at this time. Director Sherry Swan.
Here.
Director Toombs.
Here.
Director Gillette.
Here.
And Director Cordova is on the phone. Thanks for joining us, Vanessa. We just came out of a closed session.
Can we just say where Vanessa is?
Oh, she's in Italy, same place as last time, right, Vanessa? Can you hear?
Yes.
Thank you. Yes.
So I am curious when Vanessa plans to get back. Can you tell us, Vanessa?
I'm not sure she heard. Did you hear the question, Vanessa?
Pat is asking me what exactly?
When you intend to come back to United States or California or both?
When a physician clears me to fly.
Okay.
What did you say?
When a physician clears her to fly, and she's still suffering from a medical issue. Well, I hope that works out for you okay. I'm sorry if you're still not able to travel. Okay, we came out of closed session. That was just a transition briefing. There was no action taken, nothing to report.
President, I do have one quick announcement.
Okay, go ahead.
And I would ask the audience not to shoot the messenger. But we have gremlins, and so this meeting is not being video recorded. Based on our system, they've been working on it to update some of the things that I wanted corrected. So we do have an audio recording, and we have a note taker, which meets all requirements for a public meeting.
All right, thank you for clarifying that. I apologize, my voice is a little croaky tonight. I'll try to keep everybody able to hear. So we have two items on the agenda for tonight, other than closed session items. So our first item is agenda item number two, and I need to do a little bit of explaining here. We had originally hoped to use this meeting to take a vote on whether to get into contract or not with Kevin Kyle, a candidate for interim GM chief to replace Kevin Hart after he retires on the 31st of October. It turned out that we found out at the last minute that we can't make a decision that involves compensation at a special meeting. I think some folks may remember a fiasco a few years ago in the state where couple of communities decided to remunerate administrators at exorbitant salaries. The legislature passed a law saying that from here on, any decision on salary has to be made at a regular scheduled open meeting. So what we did was I decided to use this meeting as a tee-up for a decision we will be making at our next regular meeting, which is November 10th, I think it is. So we have for consideration here a resolution, and we have, as part of the agenda packet, we have the resume of Kevin Kyle, who, by the way, just as background, he was one of the three finalists when we chose Kevin Hart last time around, and it turned out he's still available. I need to point out, we were going to consider a resolution here which was redone. We originally had some salary stuff in here, and we also had a proposed contract. We had to take that out, but we still can go as far as approving a resolution if the board decides it wants to do it, and that will get us set to take the next step if it goes through tonight to vote on a contract, hopefully, at the next November meeting. I'm going to ask ask you, Adam, to give us a little bit of an explanation as to what some of the complexities are here in hiring Mr. Kyle. The intent is to hire him as a retired annuitant, which is a different kind of status than Kevin Hart has been in. Before we go there, I just want to point out one thing that was stated wrong in this draft resolution. Pat, tell me where that section is.
I believe it's section C under section 1. The subcommittee and the board of directors are currently exploring. Only the board of directors is exploring.
Why am I missing section 1?
It's essentially page 8.
Can you make sure your mics are on?
Could you say that again, Pat, please? Section 1C?
1C.
And could you read it, please?
So it says the third sentence says the subcommittee and the board of directors are currently exploring. It should read the board of directors is currently exploring.
I can't hear you, Pat.
Sorry. Oh, better?
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
I should probably sing. The third sentence says the subcommittee and the board of directors are currently exploring. It should read the board of directors is currently exploring.
Yeah, because the ad hoc committee is not really working anymore. It's made its recommendations and it's done. Adam, could you do me a favor and just explain the process we have to go through and what documentation we'll be looking at next meeting if we decide to go forward with this meeting?
Yeah, and let me just also say that that same language that we're correcting in the resolution is also in the staff report that I wrote. That is my mistake. I apologize. I thought the committee was still working.
We can fix it. Thank you.
Shall brought my attention in that he's an oversight, sir. So CalPERS has a number of strict rules when it comes to hiring someone who is retired under the CalPERS system. One of the biggest requirements is that if you hire someone, they are limited to working 960 hours during a fiscal year. So we can have a contract with a retired annuitant that covers multiple fiscal years, but it is limited to one contract. So the draft resolution that you see here, out of an abundance of caution, goes from November 1st, I think we're gonna amend that to November 11th, which would be the earliest start date that after adoption of the resolution at the next regular session. We put an effective date through December 31st, 2017. So effectively that gives us 6 months of the remainder of this fiscal year plus 6 months in the next fiscal year if we need it. One of the other major requirements of hiring a retired annuitant is that you actively recruit to fill the position on a permanent basis. So what we have done since being notified of Chief Hart's retirement is to put out a new job description, a new job announcement. I believe we posted that on the KPCSD website on the 22nd of October, 21st of October. So it's only been posted for a short period of time, but it is a requirement in order for us to hire someone as a retired annuitant and not have them within state. And for someone who is a CalPERS recipient, someone who is retired under CalPERS, there are substantial risks to them personally on accepting a position. So it would be impractical for us to get someone if that wasn't posted. And so we've taken that action in order to ensure we're complying with the regulations. When hiring someone who's a public safety officer, there's typically a 180-day time period from their retirement where you have to wait to appoint them. But for police officers, there's an exemption in the rule, and that really doesn't even apply here because Kevin Kyle has been retired since, I believe, 2012, so he would not be subject to that. The resolution that you see here just sort of sets forth the requirements. There is no compensation listed in it for the reasons that Director Welsh brought up. That said, the rule is that you cannot pay a retired annuitant any benefit. So there's no pension benefit, there's no paid time off, There's no active or retiree medical benefit. There's nothing. All that they are eligible to receive is an hourly rate per hour worked that is not less than the minimum of the approved pay schedule or in excess of the maximum of the range. So for this position, although it's not in this resolution, we've, out of an abundance of caution and in order to make sure that we are complying with CalPERS requirements, we're going to limit that to the current chief salary current chief's annual salary at an hourly rate.
Well, that will propose that.
That will propose that in our contract.
You'll have to wait, Leonard, until we're finished with this, okay? I'll give everybody a chance to ask questions and comment.
So those are the major requirements, just to wrap up. It's an ongoing compliance issue that we have to follow. So we have to continually be in active recruitment. We have to accept resumes and look for a full-time permanent replacement. That could take some time. I think it took some time to find Chief Hart, so it might not be an immediate thing. I don't know that we've received any applications in the last week.
We don't know how long Tim and Kyle want to stay here. He might decide to leave after 2 months. We don't know what our ultimate decision is going to be.
That's correct.
About what position is permanently going to look like. So we do need to be recruiting people who are interested.
Actively recruiting, and it's an at-will position, so either party could exit the contract at any given time. So that's it.
So this also gives us the maximum flexibility to decide what this position is going to look like going forward. Because we, as I understand it, by saying that we're still in the process of trying to determine if we're splitting the position, we have time to make that decision, find the financial resources to support a split if that's the way the board decides to go, and in the meantime have everything continue to run hopefully smoothly with the interim chief and general manager.
Yeah, that's correct. So part of the rationale for putting that language about the bifurcation into the staff board and into the resolution is to make clear that it's still a consideration that the board is taking. And that in and of itself, just from an HR perspective, trying to find someone willing to accept a position on a permanent full-time basis, not knowing what might be in store, that might be problematic. So in this circumstance, having a retired annuitant eligible to fill in the role is beneficial towards that matter, but it does provide you with the opportunity to make a decision. And when you do, there's no requirement that you keep Kevin Kyle or anyone who might be in that position.
Right, so I just want to underscore that, which basically means that if the new board were to decide in December or January that they wanted to split the position and they found the money to do that, they could do it. That's what this, and there was a person willing to take it, they could do it. That's what this allows us to do. So it provides for an orderly transition.
Yeah, it takes the pressure off so that we can decide. And then, we still, I think, there's one final step missing, which is a dialogue with the community over what we want to do and making sure that the information the ad hoc committee developed has been pushed out there so people understand exactly what this decision means to us. At the next meeting, this goes through, we'll be looking at a proposed contract. Also, there's a pay schedule that we have to adopt as well. Is that correct, Adam?
Yeah.
That's off.
Green light on. Green light means on. There we go.
Sorry about that.
Sorry.
This is new technology. Last time I was here, you didn't have a camera up there.
Oh, we're high tech now.
We're moving along.
So yeah, that's correct. Just one quick point. I think that we will actually have to readopt the resolution as it's written here with the compensation elements included in it. And so it will look very similar to this. We'll make the corrections that we discussed, but there will be another section that outlines his compensation. So that will be in this resolution. And we will, so CalPERS requires under California Code of Regulations 570.5, we are required to publish and make publicly available a salary schedule for all employees who are part of the CalPERS system showing their minimum and maximum of their range, and in the case of the KPOA, their steps. So we've satisfied this traditionally through the posting of our KPOA MOU, but we really did not have the appropriate documentation for the chief of police position. It was just the current contract that stipulated the salary that was paid to the chief, and then that document was placed on the district's website. So going forward, in order to make sure that we can provide CalPERS with the existing board-approved and publicly available pay schedule, we're going to just adopt a resolution that takes the salary schedules from the KPOA MOU and also puts in the minimum maximum salary range for the general manager chief of police. So it's really just record keeping and housekeeping. There's no risk to us from a CalPERS perspective of them saying, look, we're not complying with this. You know, we do have an audit. This wasn't even brought up as one of their issues. There are other alternatives in the code that allow them to make that determination. So yes, there will be a resolution, but again, it's more administrative record keeping purposes. And we should do that annually from here on out, or every time there's a compensation change in the KPOA MOU, but also should have a general pay range for the general manager chief of police. And if we move it to just the chief of police, we'll need to adopt a new resolution that establishes that salary range as well.
Okay, thank you for that. Any board member questions, comments right now before we go to the public?
No, let's do public first.
Okay, come on.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry, Vanessa, did you have anything?
No, I thought you asked for board comments. I don't have a comment at this time.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, thank you. What up?
At this point, I just want to ask, since the election is November 8th, and the next meeting is, what, November 10th? Who composes the board after the election? Because there is a precedent.
Well, the November board meeting will be the same board. There is a question about the December board meeting. The results won't be in yet, Leonard, by the time you meet in November.
It doesn't matter. Our term. My term doesn't expire until...
I'm sorry?
My term doesn't expire until after November, the November meeting.
Well, there is a precedent that was created by Chuck when he was the president of the board.
Which
when
is?
Kathy was defeated by... Patricia, and asked to be able to retain her seat until the next board meeting, and you ruled against her.
That's just wrong, Leonard. I didn't do that at all. I don't know where you got
you
that.
You did do that.
No, I didn't.
Yes, what did you do?
I'm accused of denying Director Kozel a chair because she lost the election. No, she didn't even come to the next meeting. I didn't deny anybody a chair, Leonard.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
It's recorded.
Nonsense. Yep.
Hi, I'll defer. Linda Lipscomb, I'll defer to Mr. Benson on this. Isn't it statutory, the time at which directors take office? My recollection is it's the first...
So I will not answer that question as I'm not an attorney. I'll get you that answer and come back. I'm sure we have people who can do that.
We'll comply with the law.
I think it's December.
There's going to be a question about this December because there's going to be some kind of delay in certification of the vote. We'll have to figure that out.
I see.
Anybody else?
Director, the government code and the election code requires the registrar of voters to certify the election no later than 28 days after the election, which pushes it into November or December in this case. And the new board will be sworn in at the first meeting of December.
They'll be sworn in before the next meeting, before the final.
They'll be sworn in December.
Do you think there's going to be a delay?
They take office, I thought, December 5th.
I thought, didn't you show me? Yeah, go ahead.
So although the terms may not end and begin on the date shown on that document that I handed to you at the beginning of the meeting, President Walsh, the certification of the election will occur until the 13th of December, which will be 3 days after the December meeting. So there is something that needs to be resolved with respect to when the swearing-in actually occurs.
Yeah, so there's a memo here that we have from Joe Casimir, the County Clerk Recorder Registrar, and he's saying that the official results will be of the election be presented to the Board of Supervisors to accept the results and declare winners on December 13, 2016. I don't know what that means legally in terms of the board that meets before. That may not mean anything. Maybe just we know the election results by then and the board is seated. We'll find out. Go ahead, Nathan.
Oh, okay. Just a first comment. I believe there's another misquote in that resolution, because one day for the termination of this contract says 1st of November 2017, and then there's a mention of it afterwards about December 31st.
I thought we had fixed that. There was something I thought we fixed. The determination date is supposed to be.
Okay.
So good.
Well, it was in what I saw online. I don't.
Okay, just to be clear, it should say that the last date on which you can work is December 31st, 2017.
Okay.
So we mixed up the dates, and I thought we fixed it.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks for pointing that out.
Okay. I'm a little disappointed that it's taken us this long to get to dealing with a replacement for Mr. Hart, because 25 days ago on October 1st, Lynn, you said that you were going to schedule consideration of bifurcation on the October 13th agenda. There was a brief discussion of the Cordova Sheriff's Lot's continuity plan, and this plan had concrete action items and deserved and still deserves a full discussion, but there was no action. Rather, the board chose to spend precious time on items of low priority. I think this is a poor example of prioritizing your work. And on October 13th, you did not even schedule any special meetings, and here we get a one-day notice for this meeting. So I hope we can have some better advanced planning. Thank you.
Good evening, Jim Watt. Actually, I prepared some comments, and Adam Benson addressed some of the points that I wanted to make here, but I'd kind of like to go through it because I'd like to get Adam's comment on what it is I have to say about this. So what I wrote out here was that item H in the findings and declarations approving the appointment of Mr. Kyle, it states that CalPERS requires that a minimum maximum pay rate must be complied with, and Mr. Kasson has discussed that. On the CalPERS website, it states that this salary needs to be an hourly pay rate that is within the salary schedule for the position. We just heard that presumably that hourly pay rate is based upon Mr. Hart's current salary of $145,000 annually. At a full 40-hour work week, this comes to an hourly pay rate of $70. However, if Mr. Kyle receives the same annual pay, but works 30 hours or less a week, which is the requirement because he has to stay within the 960 hours over a fiscal year period. And by the way, it's 8 months for this year and it's 6 months for next year, not six and six. If Mr. Kyle receives the same rate of pay but works that 30 hours over the next 8 months, this means that his hourly rate of pay will be $101. So it seems that due to restrictions on the number of hours that he can work in a fiscal year, that his salary will need to be adjusted downward to conform with CalPERS on the assumption that you might be considering giving him an annual salary based upon Mr. Hart's $145,000. I also want to point out that CalPERS is very specific about keeping records on this because you cannot violate the 960 hours. And it states that both the employer and the, in their website, both the employer and the employee share equal responsibility to ensure that the employment complies with retirement law. So this means that both you, the board, and the incoming chief must keep close tabs on the hours that are worked. On a somewhat related subject, regarding the fact that Mr. Kyle will assume the job of COPGM while working on a part-time basis of not more than an average of 30 hours a week and possibly below that in order to comply with the 960, I want you to refer you to the ad hoc findings on bifurcation, which had the following recommendation. Was talking about hiring a part-time general manager. It says, to even consider a part-time GM, the board must establish clear goals and direction, and operations staff must be empowered to make decisions when the GM is unavailable. I'm not sure how you intend to implement this recommendation, but you need to be aware that that was the recommendation that came to you from the ad hoc committee. Thank you.
You want to address?
Yeah.
Do you want to address that one?
Yeah. Just to clarify, Jim, on the salary amount. So the restriction is 960 hours over the course of the fiscal year. So if and I'm sure Kevin Kyle has time off scheduled. If he doesn't work for 2 weeks, there are no hours. So the 25 to 30 is really an average target over the 960 period. But that said, it's only per hour worked. So if he works 30 hours a week, his salary, the most it can be, is the monthly maximum of the current range divided by 173.333. So his rate will never be above that $70 amount that you referenced. He will have to maintain the hours within 960 over the course of the fiscal year. There's no paid time off. So if he's gone for a week or gone for 2 weeks or 3 weeks over the course of the fiscal year, those do not count as hours worked. There's no payment for him during that time period. So within this, these confines, the 960, given where we are, from a start date of about November 10 through June 30 of 2017, it's about 7 months. It's gonna need to be monitored. Jim is correct on that one. I've already spoken with Lynn. We're actually gonna try to report these hours weekly to CalPERS so that we can keep tabs on how much work we're accumulating. And if we get towards the end of the fiscal year and still haven't found a replacement, we'll have to ask him to slow down his hours and find an alternative or find someone new to replace him on a full-time permanent basis. So really it's about monitoring these hours very closely. So you're absolutely right.
Anybody else?
That wasn't my statement before, that was a question.
Just go on.
It may have had, some import beyond the question. In my opinion, a bifurcated structure between two different individuals, a district manager and a chief of police, is essential for the health of Kensington financially and culturally. At the last board meeting, there was, in light of interim DM COP Hart's resignation, a push from citizens from the KPP for the KPP CSD board to implement a bifurcated structure right now. I oppose doing that because I feel a reactive process has a lower chance of constructive outcomes than a considered process. However, I share a part of what I believe made these well-meant, motivated folks so anxious to get it started now. I don't trust the old guard to do the bifurcation, and I don't believe for a moment the argument put forth by Chuck Toombs and David Spath leading to the incorrect conclusion that we can't afford it. Considering the bungling caused by the structure advocated and administered by the old guard over the past 8 years, I think we can't afford not to bifurcate.
KPP CSD is hiring one of the runner-ups from when Hart was hired to be the new interim. A perceived problem because the old guard is again doing the choosing in the tortured crisis-driven process, beginning with Harmon. Hopefully, after November 8th, the old guard will no longer be in power. In any event, the KPP CSD owes it to Kensington, beginning now, to come up with a written and concrete date for a plan to begin the actual search and hire process starting within the next 4 months, hopefully sooner.
Dave Staff, a couple points. I'd like to confirm what Adam has already said about how a retired annuitant is paid. I am a retired annuitant. I work for the State Water Resources Control Board on a limited time basis, probably about 10 to 20 hours a month. I have to track my time on an hourly basis, and my salary is based on an hourly time. So even though the range that I, or the position I'm in, which is called principal engineer, has a salary range, I am paid on an hourly basis, just as Adam has indicated. And that's the way the retired annuitant system works at the state level. With regard to the comments just made about me, with regard to the bifurcation of the Chief of Police General Manager position, and I will quote Lawrence in saying that I said that it was too costly to do that. I never did say that. You can look at the position statement I put on the Outlook in last month's edition. You will find that I have urged that we look at a bifurcation as a possible alternative, and there may be ways of making it cost effective. It's something we're going to have to look at closely, but I think it's quite doable possibly. It's something we're also going to have to deal with regard to CalPERS, because it's quite possible that we can write contracts for both positions that are outside CalPERS system. We already have an example of that being done by a police protection district on the peninsula, where a lieutenant in the San Francisco Police Department was hired as the chief, and he is paid only a salary. He gets no benefits, and he is a CalPERS retiree. So I take issue at someone trying to state my position, which is incorrect, and I would refer you all to last month's Outlook, and you can see what my positions were. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Anything else?
I was so brief last time and forgot to bring up my second paper, but I'm going to note that Mr. Kyle would only work 25 to 30 hours a week, and I fully understand the reasons for this limit. But does this imply that the two jobs could be done in that little time? This certainly supports the argument we can do with just a part-time GM. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Marilyn Stone. I'm speaking out about the hasty backdoor hiring process 2 weeks before an election initiated by the majority board. And I understand the two directors have not been fully apprised of these plans. Is this special meeting an emergency per the policy and procedures manual? We are here about your selection of a GM COP candidate, a process that has started without much public input, a quickly arranged meeting, and is now coming to a conclusion without adequate advertising or sourcing, nor a thorough review of potential candidates. Why does this majority board operate on a crisis management mode? Secondly, you've responded to a number of the things that I was going to say regarding the GM COP, regarding discussing salary. I'm very glad to see that you realize that it is not within the law. But I will add this. If the board is deliberating in the findings of the GMCOP, as President Welch said, then I would expect that it would include all five board members
and not just the three. I hope that you will ensure that it is a discussion among all five of you.
Marilyn, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Who told you there are only three board members made this decision? I've been participating in this with all five board members for at least a month now. So I'm curious where you got that information from. Could you tell me, please?
It was my impression based on what I have read.
Where did you read it and who did you speak to?
What I read on your agenda materials.
Well,
it said staff without an indication of who was the staff. Mm-hmm.
No, I think you better take a deeper dive on that one because the whole board's been involved in this since we first got word of Mr. Hart's departure. No one's been excluded at all.
In what aspect are you talking about?
You're suggesting that somehow this majority, I won't use Leonard's pejorative, but this majority somehow is ramrodding this down the throats of the electorate, and it's not true. The whole point is the entire board has been participating in this decision since we were first apprised of Mr. Hart's departure.
But the public has not been apprised of it.
Well, you were saying the whole board was not participating. That's not true. So let's
once again accusing us of things that are absolutely not true and made out of whole cloth. And I hope that Rochelle and Vanessa will speak up and indicate that you have been included in every single discussion about this. We've had no board majority discussions about this.
We couldn't do that by law.
This is Vanessa. I can tell you I received notice of this meeting 40 minutes before the general public. So I don't consider that to be inclusive.
Vanessa, you received notice of this meeting when we last discussed when we would meet next. We had 2 dates. One was last Saturday, if we could get everything ready by last Saturday. The other was tonight, if we couldn't get everything ready by last Saturday. You were part of that discussion, at least allegedly you were listening in on your phone.
It's not true, Len.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
She wasn't on our last meeting.
Regardless,
she wasn't.
The whole process is rushed.
Yes, she was.
The public has not been informed. I mean, in what governing body gives the general public 24 hours notice midweek? I mean, people have kids, they need to arrange for babysitters, they need to come to this meeting. It's again another meeting that you're calling due to an emergency. But this is not an emergency.
But I'd offer again,
to hire.
Marilyn, I'd offer again, the full board was aware of this decision and this process.
Let Rochelle speak.
Okay,
it's fine.
It's
fine. Go ahead and finish.
No, please, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to go in. Are you okay. Finished, Marilyn? No, please.
We're not supposed to be having a job.
Mr. President, just for one clarification, this is not an emergency meeting.
No, it's not. I mean, we had to act hastily because we found out September 1st that we were on a ticking clock in terms of the retirement.
September 1st. Nothing that has happened today has any bearing on anything.
It does. First of all, last time we had a closed session on this, we reported out that we had met with Kevin Kyle and the interview went well. So the public knew then that we were thinking of hiring him on some basis.
Did you mean September 1st?
Well, today is not an emergency.
You knew about an emergency. Did you mean October or September 1st?
When did you first tell us that you were retiring?
It was 2 months ago. So you're right, it was September.
Yeah, so we had 2 months.
A whole month before you told us.
When did you tell us?
I did not know September 1st. I knew.
It was whenever the board meeting was. That's when we first found out. I don't know what the date was.
Whenever you announced it, yes. And so,
we have Michelle, you did know at the board meeting when the rest of us were informed.
Maybe the September board meeting, yeah.
But
not September 1st.
Okay, I didn't know on September 1st either. Whenever that first board meeting was.
The resignation letter was posted the day before the October 1st meeting, so that would have been September 30th. But you knew well before then, it sounds like, some of you.
Yeah, well, it's a dirty conspiracy. We're trying to hide something here. Look, we're just trying to take care of the district's business, okay?
That was
our best to find a replacement.
That was disrespectful.
That's not a trivial piece of...
I'm hearing a lot of disrespect myself.
Let's move on.
Okay.
All right, so any further discussion comments by the board?
Wait. Can you close public comments?
Come on up.
Thank you.
John Boccioni. I'm going to read some remarks here. Yet another hastily called surprise special meeting and more board majority maneuvering. I've been out of town for a few days, so I must have missed the edict that declared our hillside hamlet fiefdom to be ruled by a very small group of attorneys. What happened to the community's role in making decisions concerning how our governance is to be conducted? For example, we know the state requires our hillside hamlet to have a general manager, and yet the KPP CSD board majority is seeking another chief of police to fill the combined position as it did in the past. You might have noticed that the board majority's prior choices for the combined chief of police general manager have not exactly worked out very well for Kensington. But still they persist. The board majority wants to offer a prospective candidate for the combined position a one-year contract. Apparently now, that may not be so. They will saddle the district with the board majority's failed plan long after they are gone. Does this make sense to anyone? The old ad hoc subcommittee that studied the separation of the chief of police general manager position provided much information addressing why the combined position is such a bad idea. Why isn't the board majority acting on their findings? There are still so many unanswered questions waiting for answers. Why is Mr. Hart resigning? Will an exit interview be conducted? Will the community be given the information? Why is the KPP CSD board majority in such a rush to hire a replacement chief of police and not a general manager? And as we found out tonight, this particular document that was posted, was that 24 hours ago, almost to the minute, is a draft. So it is not the thing. It was never labeled a draft, but now it becomes a draft. Again, pointing to this very hastily called meeting, and again, it speaks to the management or the job that the board is doing. I also want to say, last but not least, candidate Dave, that small minority of individuals that come to every meeting you blame for creating the discontent in our community is present tonight. Since you claim to be a thoughtful candidate, you might wish to take this opportunity to offer an apology to them. Thank you very much.
I'd like to correct a few of the things that you said, John, because it's sort of amazing to me that you can sit here and say those things. It is not a one-year position.
What is that?
It is not a one-year position. It is an at-will position, as Mr. Benson described.
Yes, as they clarified today.
Mr. Kyle, it's always been an at-will position if you look at the contract.
I did.
Of every manager that we've had. Secondly,
would you like me to
read majority. Excuse me, sir, I'm talking. I appreciate it if you would not interrupt me. Secondly, the board majority, as you've just heard, did not do anything to rush this through. This has been a decision of all five members of the board. We have talked about it. In fact, Rochelle drafted the job description that was given for Mr. Kyle. So we've all been participating equally in the discussions and the decisions that are being made tonight. So for you to sit up here and accuse the board majority of trying to push something through is just offensive, and it's a lie. So I'm going off the board happily because I'm tired of listening to people like you and Marilyn and other people in this room disrespecting people on this board and accusing us of acting unethically and unprofessionally. It is absolutely annoying and inappropriate, and it's not consistent with what I believe are the core values of our community. I don't believe that the small minority of people who get up and speak at every meeting represent the views of this community. And I refuse to believe that, because I know too many people who have good spirit and good intentions and are not willing to sit up here and accuse people and lie, outright lie, about what has happened based on assumptions that people make that they quote-unquote read in non-existent materials. So thank you for your comments, but I'm not going to sit here and take it anymore.
I take it you're done. I stand by my comments. I've read all of this, and I take offense to what you are saying. I'm not lying. Some of what I see going on here is really disrespectful. I mean, really disrespectful. And for you to actually sit there and claim that I'm lying, I don't get that.
All right, that's enough. She said...
Am I done? Is that it?
We need Mr. Bergen to come up and talk.
Okay. Well, thank you for the opportunity to make some comments.
I have a question, please.
Hold on. Vanessa has a question. Okay.
Go ahead.
There is the assertion that this was somehow a unanimous action bringing this to the dais, and that's not how I recall it. So can we have a head count from closed session of who put this item forward for today? Because I would be a no. So this was not a unanimous...
Nobody said it was unanimous. They said that everybody, all of the board members were involved in these discussions from the moment the issue came up. You know, we don't necessarily all agree, but we all participate in the discussions together.
All right. That's an important distinction that I just wanted to make. That. Thank
you. That was correct. Rochelle helped us get to this point. She drafted the job description. She and Pat were the two that were supposed to drive this thing forward so we could get to this point tonight. Anyway, go ahead now.
Okay, everybody can hear me, right? A technical point for everyone. Although this microphone looks like the old ones, you don't have to kiss this one. Especially if you have a loud voice. And it does hurt those people who use hearing aids. I have to be out because I've got two things going tonight. So I'm not sure if I'm repeating or whatever. But I do have a few things to say. In 2 weeks, this board will become a lame duck board. And the question I and many people have is why this rush to hire both an attorney and an interim GM-COP? Although your choice for an interim GM-COP is the one I would have chosen when he was up for hire the last time, he is still a policeman, he is not a general manager, though he has some business background. And I also believe that he lives quite a distance away. All his things are in Santa Clara, and that's a long way to come any time of day in terms of traffic. I also understand that Mr. Hart mentioned that he would stay on if needed. And I think that's a very nice thing of him to do. So I still don't see what the rush is. Have we been discussing Ms. Morrison at this point?
Not yet.
Okay, that's later. Okay. As I said, I was out for a while. One suggestion would be to go to a temp agency and hire a temp manager with accounting skills. No one will complain if you do that. We have been waiting for a long time for a qualified GM here. Also, with less than 2 weeks before the election, you have made the decision to spend a lot more to make the new board director's job harder by pushing through an expensive hire. This could generate more legal fees, and the new board might have to start out by firing somebody, which is not cool. also, another point is that I believe you can't hire someone to be an interim chief GM anymore, because you've been informed by the Attorney General ruling that it is an unlawful position. So you would be the fight, the AG. I'm not a lawyer, but this is what I've heard. So basically, those are the points I wanted to make, and I thank you. And I thank Vanessa Cordova for joining us tonight.
Just to clarify, Chief Hart can't stay on beyond October 31st. That's a restriction in his own situation. So we're done after October 31st with him. And personally, I'm not going to let this community be without somebody to steward, you know, be a steward of it, even until the next board comes. You know, that'll make their job easier if there's an easy transition. Anyway, not enough. I'm calling the question.
May I go ahead? Thank you. First, a huge thanks to Adam Benson, who has taken more phone calls for me this month than anyone should have to. That I'm not related to. It's been a much more arduous process than we anticipated. I know that Adam and I, going in, we thought, okay, this has got to be something that's got to be kind of quick and clear. And it became a little bit more muddled, kind of the further we went down the road. So I do apologize that the job description did take a long time to get established, because also we didn't quite understand the parameters. I want to clarify a couple of points regarding Mr. Kyle. Mr. Kyle removed himself from the application process last year. And so I don't want to have any comparisons between he and Mr. Hart to anyone's detriment, because two different candidates. Mr. Hart was approved unanimously last year, or 15 months ago. So Mr. Kyle was already out of the process prior to our final decision making. I have had the pleasure of interviewing Mr. Kyle three times over the past year. We've been in discussions. I think he's a great candidate for Kensington. But I also very much appreciate that for the community, this is a very rapid process, and that you're a little bit, that lots of people are kind of reeling and not feeling very informed. Because I've learned that we're actually not making a decision. I mean, Mr. Kyle is unable, due to the law, to come on board before November 11th. It would be my recommendation that we will be without a GM, essentially, for 10 or 11 days, which brings us out of compliance. So actually, it would be my recommendation that we table this interim appointment at least until the next regular meeting, and we hire an interim, and we hire a general manager through the public management group, a conversation I've had with our attorney, John Holtzman, several times. And I would like to do this. I think it gives us a bit of flexibility. One, this is not to say that I am not against hiring Kevin Kyle. I like him very much. It gives us more time with him, should the board choose to do that, because we can then utilize him almost on a full-time basis if we hold off until November or December. I think at that point we will need police management in place. And I just think that then folks get the chance to know him. I'm not criticizing the man in any way. Our methods were a little hasty and not as clean as I would like for the community. So I think it behooves us a little bit to kind of just take a quick step back and just table this discussion until the 11th, when we can discuss salary, when we can discuss when we'd like him to come on board, and have Sergeant Holt work as our, I believe, as the existing supervisor of the police department and then bring in someone from PLN. Am I getting the acronym right, Adam? PLG, but through PLN.
PMG,
excuse me, public manager. If I can't outright beg for Adam to serve as an interim GM, which I'm trying, believe me. That's all I have to say.
Good idea.
Yeah. Well, in some respects, this is somewhat moot. The decision that him coming on board will depend on is one that is to be made on the 10th of November, yay or nay. In fact, I don't know if we need to adopt this resolution tonight, frankly, because we can still go forward and come up with this same issue we considered on November 10th, including a contract and all the other requirements we have to meet for CalPERS.
I defer to Adam on this, so we need to pass a resolution tonight. We may need it for Kevin Kyle's peace of mind, because he has a lot of risk here if things aren't done properly.
So we did notify Kevin Kyle that, so initially the full resolution, including the compensation package, would have been included in this. We could not do that because of restrictions on adopting compensation on special meeting. We notified Mr. Kyle right away. And he was obviously, he wasn't upset by it, but he did expect to start sooner, so he was trying to gear up, and a big issue for him was certainly getting some time with our outgoing chief so that they could ensure a smooth transition. That said, I don't think you would have to adopt this tonight in order to adopt it on the 10th. I mean, the resolution that you adopt on the 10th will include all of the same information, and it will include his compensation needs. This will be then shared with CalPERS to ensure that it is in compliance with their requirements, which will also give him peace of mind. As this current example of having that compensation needs in it, if we sent this to CalPERS, they would say it's missing that. How much are you paying him? And then we would have to send them that new resolution on the 10th anyway. So I don't think you have to, but it would certainly be given a peace of mind.
I move we adopt the resolution with the amendments that we've discussed.
All right, the resolution we're talking about is number 2016-14, correct?
Yes.
All right, I'll second the motion. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Vanessa?
No.
Okay.
All right. You got that one?
Yes.
Okay. Motion passes. So come back on the 10th. That's when the decision actually is to be made about whether to hire him or not. So we'll move on to the next agenda item, which is the possible decision to hire Emma Morrison as our general counsel. Pat, could I ask you to do this on that?
Sure. So we have interviewed quite a few different law firms to replace the public law group, and including some solo practitioners as well as some firms. Amara, I believe is what she says her name.
Amara.
Oh, God, that was like Tamara. Okay. Amara Morrison is with a firm called Wendell Rosen Black and Dean. It's a very well-respected firm. It's a full-service firm, much like the public law group, so that we would not have to go to other sources in order to get a full-service, meaning review of legal considerations about this building, for example, or about personnel matters, or that kind of thing. They do represent a lot of different public entities, so they have the same or similar experience to the public law group. Ms. Morrison is highly qualified, as you can see from her resume. I won't go over it, but she worked as the assistant city attorney in Livermore and in Walnut Creek for a number of years. We've interviewed her and thought that she would be a good match for the board. The discussion that we have, which is a fair question to ask, is should we hire someone from a big firm or a sole practitioner. And I believe at least some of us think that the value that comes from hiring a full-service firm is that you don't have to pay for every time you need some kind of special question answered. Instead, you have someone go to a partner or go to an associate and get that kind of backup, whereas a sole practitioner has only him or herself to rely on, and if they need any kind of special expertise, they have to go out and seek that from another source, a law firm that doesn't know our district, doesn't know us, and also charges that we really could charge. So there is an argument that can be made that a full-service law firm is better. The fire department, for example, has Myers Nave, which is a really well-respected firm. Done a lot of work with them, and they are on top of the game. We can't have them represent us for potential conflict of interest reasons. But they have a full-service law firm. That's what we're, at least I'm proposing that we consider for this. So the resolution sets forth the person we will be hiring. It sets forth the rate. Now you will note that the rate that they will be charging us will be higher than what we're paying for the LG. We have talked with Anna about making sure that we have some processes in place to limit the amount of time that board members can spend on outside counsel, and making sure that we have some procedure in place that ensures that if we're getting close to expending the number of hours that we've contracted for in a particular month, that we will in fact get some kind of notification of that so that we know we're gonna potentially go over the limit and can scale back what we wanna do. The arrangement that we have reached with them is one that allows us to get a certain number of hours per month at a reduced hourly rate. And then if we go over that hour, we pay a higher hourly rate. So there's an incentive for us not to overuse our outside counsel. And if we do, then they get to charge at their higher rate. We also asked her after the last board meeting if she would consider reducing her rate for attending board meetings. So instead of charging the hourly rate that we've agreed to, that she would charge a significantly reduced rate. She agreed to that she will in fact charge for the first 3 hours a significantly reduced rate at any board meeting, and that will not be taken out of the hours per month that we've negotiated with them. So that was a big deal for them. So I think we all liked her. We thought she was competent and could give us the kind of advice that we need. It will be up to the next board to institute what we tried to institute this year, which is a limitation on the number of hours or number of times members of the board can contact outside counsel. And we will try to impress upon board members that they should only be going to our outside counsel with things that are actually legal issues and not with gripes or complaints or beratements of our outside counsel for one reason or another. So hopefully, if we're successful in negotiating this deal with this particular firm or a new firm, we will have those kind of limitations in place, which will help us control our legal costs.
Okay, so just to be clear, the proposal is for Rochelle and for Pat to complete the negotiation with Tamara and see if they can come to an agreement about a proposed rate and into a contract. Actually, again, we're asking Rochelle and Pat through this resolution to come up with a proposed contract for consideration at the next meeting in November.
Okay, just to clarify though, Pat and I did certainly work together on the GMCOP, but I haven't really actively worked at all on this.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I didn't know this was going to be on the agenda until yesterday, so.
I believe it was discussed.
We did. We did talk about ours. Maybe do you want to make
discuss exactly what I would be going back and asking her for?
Yes, that's right.
So do you want to?
Well, no, I'm willing to. I have a few comments, but we have a public comment first.
Okay, first, Pat, I'd be happy for you to show me where the resolution says at will, but we'll do that after the meeting because I just read it and then I didn't find it. Okay. Amara, what's her name?
She says Tamara.
Okay.
A-M-A-R-A.
Yeah, okay. I didn't put that in my notes. Proposed counsel, her experience seemed to be principally and really almost exclusively in land use, which is where she's listed on the Wendell website, and she's not listed under the public sector group. So I'm asking, does that mean she is really well qualified to handle the nitty-gritty of, we'll just say, general managing personnel management of a district like ours? Or will she farm out the legal business, which, okay, she's got a firm, but does that mean we have to pay her rate plus the other rate to get the advice? I hope not. Okay, you've already explained the initial service period, and as with the other resolution, I hope we have in this contract that we could cancel it at any time. Do we?
Or always fire your lawyers, or they can fire you twice now for us.
Okay, well, just checking.
And let me clarify something. This woman, just to give credit where credit is due, came through a recommendation by a friend of Jim Watts. He's the one who found her for us. We did not find her in the
book. Well, okay, but like
I just say, clarify.
Yeah, no, but she was principally land use. And
no, that's not quite true.
She's actually, when she worked at the City of Livermore and the City of Walnut Creek, she was very involved in personnel matters.
Okay, but she was still doing a lot of land use in Livermore.
Oh, yeah, okay. We have a span of municipal work that runs from 1989 to 2015. It's a long time acting as a city attorney or an assistant city attorney.
Well, that wasn't my interpretation of the CV. Thank you.
Well, read it.
Yeah. I did, twice. Come on.
Linda Lipscomb, I want to compliment you. However, it came to you to use the firm of Wendell Rose and Dean Black. It's a very fine firm of long-standing in the Bay Area. And I note in particular that this attorney, Ms. Morrison, was the city attorney for Livermore and for Walnut Creek. And I applaud you on finding that individual. Thank you.
Thank you. Just to clarify, I'm reading, okay? It says Assistant City Attorney, Deputy City Attorney, City of Walnut Creek, 1989 to 2001. Assistant City Attorney, Senior Assistant City Attorney, City of Livermore, 2001 to January 2015.
Details under that.
Can I ask a quick question?
What?
I can do it from here.
No,
I
not too close to the mic. No, that's a bit.
How much time elapsed between? How much time elapsed between Parman leaving and Kevin coming, during which Ricky Hart ran the police department?
Ricky Hall.
Yeah, Ricky Hall.
So what happened last time, if you don't let me explain, is that we actually had Chief Hart come in right after Chief Harmon left, but he came in as general manager because he couldn't be sworn in as police chief until he passed his background investigation. That's a requirement every time somebody's hired as chief of police. So it took under 4 or 5 weeks for that background investigation to finish. So during that time before he was sworn in, he was just GM. Ricky Hull was acting chief, but Ricky Hull was, you know, relying quite a bit on advice from Chief Hart, from General Manager Hart at the time for direction.
But Ricky did that job for 5 weeks, so?
Well, with a lot of help from, a lot of informal help from Chief Hart.
Seems as though that there's not such a crisis.
No, there's not a crisis as long as we act quickly to fill the gap, yes.
Are we all right, let the lawyers or the...
Yes,
We sort of got diverted there. Anyway, so we have a motion.
I have
a discussion.
Yes, I'm about to discuss. I have a question. Does any board member have a conflict of interest? or this is a question I asked in closed session earlier when we were discussing Ms. Morrison's possible appointment or connection with the law firm of Wendell Rosen, Black and Dean.
I know two partners at the firm, Rick Waxman and Tracy Green. They're old friends of mine I've known for a long time. That doesn't, it doesn't disqualify me. I've gotten no money from the firm, period.
No, but correct me. I mean, maybe I missed. That was not something that I have heard previously. So I would have liked to hear when I asked if there were any conflicts.
Actually, I did say that in a closed session to you where I said we should speak with them to see if we can get them to come on board. I know Rick and I know the firm.
Yeah, I believe so Chuck said that he would speak directly to
I was very clear about that.
Yeah, that's far cry from having a conflict of interest.
He is a resident.
A resident
of
Rick is a Western resident, and Rick endorsed you, Chuck.
Yeah, and that doesn't disqualify me from making recommendation to Iris firm. The only thing that disqualifies me is if I take money from them. My full intention here is to act what I think is in the best interest of this district. Now then, you can sit there and smirk and take whatever negative attitudes you want about that. The reality is, I'm trying to do what I think is in the best interest of this district.
Rick,
and there
you're
is
a lawyer too.
There you go. Perfect.
I'm not being critical of that. I'm just pointing out that it's not entirely doesn't seem entirely appropriate.
All right. We have PLG has essentially left us as of July 15th. We've kind of been sputtering along. So I did not realize this was going to be on the agenda, as I said, until yesterday. And I don't intend to merit garland this board regarding the GM, Chief of Police. But I do question why at this moment we need to make a decision on general counsel 12 days before. Ms. Morrison herself asked about what would occur after an election, and I couldn't answer that question for her. And I think that this is something to be considering possibly by a new board, because this is a long, ongoing relationship. I also feel that despite the discount, it is a very, very high rate. We spoke to other practitioners, admittedly not firms, who were more in line with around $180 an hour. $395 an hour is a general hourly rate. Initial service periods each month. We don't have an hourly rate here, but I think Pat probably has that, or at one point she had said, Ms. Morrison had said. A further discount rate of $320 per hour for initial service periods. And then her reduced rate for attending meetings if the length does not exceed a specified limit.
Which is $300 an hour.
I'm sorry, 300 hours?
Yeah, $900 per
3 hours or three?
3 hours.
3 hours per meeting, okay.
So we would have her for 3 hours per meeting.
Just so we're clear, the person who suggested the $180 an hour fee was someone who was a sole practitioner, has absolutely no help. She would have to go out for every kind of special information that she needs. And I will tell you that, you know, as someone who works at a big firm, we often are in competition with people who have lower rates. And my response to that would be, it really depends. The rate is not what determines what is a good lawyer or a bad lawyer. What determines who was a good lawyer or a bad lawyer is how good they are. In terms of PLG and why this is necessary now is, as indicated by someone, I think it was you,
Rochelle.
They told us they would no longer be our attorneys as of July. As a favor to us, they have continued to service our district. But that's getting harder and harder, in part because part of the reason they left has to do with the tone and the demeanor of some board members and the way they deal with them. They just don't want to put up with that anymore. And in part because they decided that they don't want to represent us anymore. Tomorrow they could say we will no longer do this. They can say that. We can't be without legal counsel for this district. We have a lot of questions that have to be answered.
You could learn to compromise.
Excuse me?
You could learn to compromise.
I compromise all the time, Kathy.
Well, I don't think so.
Well, you might want to talk to some people who know me then. In any case, so we can't really risk being without counsel. It's getting harder and harder to get responsive answers from PLG because they want out. So I don't think we have a choice, unfortunately, Michelle, of waiting. I do think that it is good management and good governance for us to hire a firm. If the new board decides that they want to hire a different firm, that will allow them to take their time, interview some firms. We know how long it takes for us to do that, determine what they want. And then change counsel again. I mean, there's nothing written in stone.
Yeah, let me emphasize. I mean, it'll make the job of the new board a lot more difficult if there's no attorney around for them to go to when they seek advice. So this is going to help the new board, and they can always find another attorney. They're free to do that. So, do I have a motion?
I understand that she is primarily a land use attorney. I look closely at her LinkedIn bio, and she works with a private sector over and over and over again. And I have some concerns because in the last board meeting or the board meeting before that, Chief Hart said that there was in all likelihood going to be some charges against an officer coming up. When we were asked about what was the status of Ramos, and he said unrelated, there would be other charges. And so I'm wondering how helpful is a land use attorney going to be for us when we have litigation and legal issues potentially coming up? I understand Barrow is supposed to appeal the Barrington. Buffington said that he was going to appeal. That was in the newspaper some time ago. I don't know if that's current or not. We're not informed, so we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen with Ramos. So I think it's been optimistic to think that we can have legal fees at what did you budget it? Less than $80,000 or whatever? Let's be realistic. It's going to be a couple hundred thousand this year in my estimation of what's been going on and what's not being talked about at this point. So will a land use attorney be helpful to us?
So I have the answer to that. I don't believe she's a land use attorney in Maryland. In her current firm, they have chosen to put her in that group for a number of reasons, I assume. But in any case, she comes from a full service firm. We will get anyone in the firm at the rate that we've negotiated. So if there is a personnel matter, then that will be handled by their employment group. If there's a land use matter, it will be handled by their land use group. If there's a governance issue, it will be handled by their governance group. That's the advantage you have when you go with a big firm. If we were to hire a sole practitioner, as the one that Michelle referred to, if we had a personnel problem, she would have to go out to a firm and get them to handle the personnel matter for us. They would then charge us at their regular rate because they would have no interest in giving us some kind of a deal because it'd be a one-off thing. So that's why we thought a big firm or a larger firm would be better than a sole practitioner, a full service firm.
All right, I'm going to call the question. Do we have a motion?
I move we adopt the resolution as proposed.
That's resolution number 2016-16, correct?
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
3-2.
That's democracy, Leonard. Isn't it wonderful?
It is when you get it.
Well, Leonard?
Yeah, you think you're getting some other democracy tonight?
That's not bleak.
Go to Russia.
I move adjourning the meeting.
I second the motion. All in favor?
What was the motion? Wait a minute.
Adjourning the meeting.
Well, let's think about this. We can burn through another hour of insults.
My phone.